Chapter 46. By trying we can easily learn to endure adversity. Another man's, I mean. Pudd'nhead Wilson's new calendar. You soon find your long-ago dreams of India rising in a sort of vague and luscious moonlight above the horizon rim of your opaque consciousness, and softly lighting up a thousand forgotten details which were parts of a vision that had once been vivid to you when you were a boy, and steeped your spirit in tales of the East. The barbaric gorgeousnesses, for instance, and the princely titles, the sumptuous titles, the sounding titles, how good they taste in the mouth. The Nizam of Hyderabad, the Maharaja of Travancore, the Nabob of Jabalpur, the Begum of Bhopal, the Nawab of Mysore, the Rants of Gulner, the Akhund of Swats, the Rao of Rahilkund, the Gaekwar of Baroda. Indeed, it is a country that runs richly to name. The great god Vishnu has 108 special ones, 108 peculiarly holy ones, names just for Sunday use only. I learned the whole of Vishnu's 108 by heart once, but they wouldn't stay. I don't remember any of them now, but John W. and the romances connected with those princely native houses, to this day they are always turning up, just as in the old times. They were sweating out a romance in an English court in Bombay a while before we were there. In this case a native prince, 16-12 years old, who has been enjoying his titles and dignities and estates unmolested for 14 years, is suddenly hailed into court on the charge that he is rightfully no prince at all, but a pauper peasant, that the real prince died when 2½ years old, that the death was concealed, and a peasant child smuggled into the royal cradle, and that this present incumbent was that smuggled substitute. This is the very material that so many Oriental tales have been made of. The case of that great prince, the Gaekwar of Baroda, is a reversal of the theme. When that throne fell vacant, no heir could be found for some time, but at last one was found in the person of a peasant child who was making mud pies in a village street, and having an innocent good time. But his pedigree was straight. He was the true prince, and he has reigned ever since, with none to dispute his right. Lately there was another hunt for an heir to another princely house, and one was found who was circumstanced about as the Gaekwar had been. His fathers were traced back, in humble life, along a branch of the ancestral tree to the point where it joined the stem 14 generations ago, and his heirship was thereby squarely established. The tracing was done by means of the records of one of the great Hindu shrines, where princes on pilgrimage record their names and the date of their visit. This is to keep the prince's religious account straight and his spiritual person safe. But the record has the added value of keeping the pedigree authentic too. When I think of Bombay now, at this distance of time, I seem to have a kaleidoscope at my eye, and I hear the clash of the glass bits as the splendid figures change, and fall apart, and flash into new forms, figure after figure, and with the birth of each new form I feel my skin crinkle, and my nerve web tingle with a new thrill of wonder and delight. These remembered pictures float past me in a sequence of contracts, following the same order always, and always whirling by and disappearing with the swiftness of a dream, leaving me with the sense that the actuality was the experience of an hour, at most, whereas it really covered days, I think. The series begins with the hiring of a year native manservant, a person who should be selected with some care, because as long as he is in your employ he will be about as near to you as your clothes. In India your day may be said to begin with the year's knock on the bedroom door, accompanied by a formula of words, a formula which is intended to mean that the bath is ready. It doesn't really seem to mean anything at all. But that is because you are not used to your English. You will presently understand. Where he gets his English is his own secret. There is nothing like it elsewhere in the earth, or even in paradise, perhaps, but the other place is probably full of it. You hire him as soon as you touch Indian soil, for no matter what your sex is, you cannot do without him. He is messenger, valet, chambermaid, table waiter, lady's maid, courier he is everything. He carries a coarse linen clothes bag and a quilt. He sleeps on the stone floor outside your chamber door, and gets his meals you do not know where, nor when. You only know that he is not fed on the premises, either when you are in a hotel, or when you are a guest in a private house. His wages are large from an Indian point of view, and he feeds and clothes himself out of them. We had three of them in 2.5 months. The first one's rate was 30 rupees a month, that is to say, 27 cents a day. The rate of the others, RS, 40 rupees a month. A princely sum, for the native switchman on a railway, and the native servant in a private family get only RS 7 per month, and the farm hand only 4. The two former feed and clothe themselves and their families on their $1.99 per month, but I cannot believe that the farm hand has to feed himself on his $1.008. I think the farm probably feeds him, and that the whole of his wages, except a trifle for the priest, go to the support of his family. That is, to the feeding of his family, for they live in a mud hut, handmade, and, doubtless, rent-free, and they wear no clothes, at least, nothing more than a rag. And not much of a rag at that, in the case of the males. However, these are handsome times for the farm hand. He was not always the child of luxury that he is now. The chief commissioner of the central provinces, in a recent official utterance wherein he was rebuking a native deputation for complaining of hard times, reminded them that they could easily remember when a farm hand's wages were only half a rupee former value a month, that is to say, less than a cent a day, nearly $2.99 a year. If such a wage earner had a good deal of a family and they all have that, for God is very good to these poor natives in some ways, he would save a profit of 15 cents, clean and clear, out of his year's toil. I mean a frugal, thrifty person would, not one given to display and ostentation. And if he owed $13.50 and took good care of his health, he could pay it off in 90 years. Then he could hold up his head, and look his creditors in the face again. Think of these facts, and what they mean. India does not consist of cities. There are no cities in India to speak of. Its stupendous population consists of farm laborers. India is one vast farm, one almost interminable stretch of fields with mud fences between. Think of the above facts, and consider what an incredible aggregate of poverty they place before you. The first bearer that applied, waited below and sent up his recommendations. That was the first morning in Bombay. We read them over, carefully, cautiously, thoughtfully. There was not a fault to find with them except one. They were all from Americans. Is that a slur? If it is, it is a deserved one. In my experience, an American's recommendation of a servant is not usually valuable. We are too good-natured a race. We hate to say the unpleasant thing. We shrink from speaking the unkind truth about a poor fellow whose bread depends upon our verdict. So we speak of his good points only, thus not scrupling to tell a lie, a silent lie, for in not mentioning his bad ones we as good as say he hasn't any. The only difference that I know of between a silent lie and a spoken one is that the silent lie is a less respectable one than the other, and it can deceive, whereas the other can't as a rule. We not only tell the silent lie as to a servant's faults, but we sin in another way. We overpraise his merits, for when it comes to writing recommendations of servants we are a nation of gushers, and we have not the Frenchman's excuse. In France you must give the departing servant a good recommendation, and you must conceal his faults. You have no choice. If you mention his faults for the protection of the next candidate for his services, he can sue you for damages, and the court will award them too. And, moreover, the judge will give you a sharp dressing down from the bench for trying to destroy a poor man's character and rob him of his bread. I do not state this on my own authority. I got it from a French physician of fame and repute, a man who was born in Paris and had practiced there all his life. And he said that he spoke not merely from common knowledge, but from exasperating personal experience. As I was saying, the bearer's recommendations were all from American tourists, and St. Peter would have admitted him to the fields of the blessed on them. I mean, if he is as unfamiliar with our people and our ways as I suppose he is. According to these recommendations, Manuel X was supreme in all the arts connected with his complex trade, and these manifold arts were mentioned and praised in detail. His English was spoken of in terms of warm admiration, admiration verging upon rapture. I took pleased note of that, and hoped that some of it might be true. We had to have someone right away, so the family went downstairs, and took him a week on trial, then sent him up to me, and departed on their affairs. I was shut up in my quarters with a bronchial cough, and glad to have something fresh to look at, something new to play with. Manuel filled the bill. Manuel was very welcome. He was toward 50 years old, tall, slender, with a slight stoop, an artificial stoop, a deferential stoop, a stoop rigidified by long habit, with face of European mold, short hair intensely black, gentle black eyes, timid black eyes, indeed. Complexion very dark, nearly black in fact, face smooth shaven. He was bareheaded and barefooted, and was never otherwise, while his week with us lasted. His clothing was European, cheap, flimsy, and showed much wear. He stood before me, and inclined his head and body in the pathetic Indian way, touching his forehead with the finger ends of his right hand, in salute. I said, Manuel, you are evidently Indian, but you seem to have a Spanish name when you put it all together. How is that? A perplexed look gathered in his face. It was plain that he had not understood, but he didn't let on. He spoke back placidly. Name, Manuel.
Yes, master.
I know, but how did you get the name?
Oh, yes, I suppose.
Think happened so. Father same name, not mother. I saw that I must simplify my language and spread my words apart if I would be understood by this English scholar.
Well then, how did your father get his name?
Oh, he, brightening a little, e Christian, Portuguese, live in Goa, I born Goa, mother not Portuguese, mother native high caste Brahmin, cool and Brahmin, highest caste, no other so high caste, I high caste Brahmin too. Christian too, same like father, high caste Christian Brahmin, master Salvation Army. All this haltingly, and with difficulty. Then he had an inspiration, and began to pour out a flood of words that I could make nothing of, so I said, there, don't do that. I can't understand Hindustani.
Not Hindustani, master English. Always I speaking English sometimes, when I talking every day all the time with you.
Very well, stick to that. That is intelligible. It is not up to my hopes, it is not up to the promise of the recommendations, still it is English, and I understand it. Don't elaborate it. I don't like elaborations, when they are crippled by uncertainty of touch.
Master?
Oh, never mind. It was only a random thought. I didn't expect you to understand it.
How did you get your English? Is it an acquirement, or just a gift of God?
After some hesitation, piously.
Yes, he very good.
Christian God very good, Hindu God very good too.
2 million Hindu God, 1 Christian God, make 2,000,001.
All mine, 2,000,001 God.
I got a plenty.
Sometime I pray all time with those, keep it up, go all time every day, give something at shrine, all good for me, make me better man, good for my family, damn good.
Then he had another inspiration, and went rambling off into fervent confusions and incoherencies, and I had to stop him again. I thought we had talked enough, so I told him to go to the bathroom and clean it up and remove the slops this to get rid of him. He went away, seeming to understand, and got out some of my clothes, and began to brush them. I repeated my desire several times, simplifying and re-simplifying it, and at last he got the idea. Then he went away, and put a coolie at the work, and explained that he would lose caste if he did it himself. It would be pollution, by the law of his caste, and it would cost him a deal of fuss and trouble to purify himself, and accomplish his rehabilitation. He said that that kind of work was strictly forbidden to persons of caste, and as strictly restricted to the very bottom layer of Hindu society, the despised Sudra, the toiler, the laborer. He was right, and apparently the poor Sudra has been content with his strange lot, his insulting distinction, for ages and ages, clear back to the beginning of things, so to speak. Buckle says that his name, laborer, is a term of contempt, that it is ordained by the Institutes of Menu 900b. cc, that if a Sudra sit on a level with his superior he shall be exiled, or branded. Without going into particulars I will remark that as a rule they wear no clothing that would conceal the brand. M.T. dot dot semicolon, if he speak contemptuously of his superior, or insult him, he shall suffer death. If he listen to the reading of the sacred books he shall have burning oil poured in his ears. If he memorize passages from them, he shall be killed. If he marry his daughter to a Brahmin the husband shall go to hell for defiling himself by contact with a woman so infinitely his inferior. And that it is forbidden to a Sudra to acquire wealth. He bulk of the population of India, says Bucklet, population today, 300,000,000, is the Sudras, the workers, the farmers, the creators of wealth. Manuel was a failure, poor old fellow. His age was against him. He was desperately slow, and phenomenally forgetful. When he went 3 blocks on an errand he would be gone 2 hours, and then forget what it was he went for. When he packed a trunk it took him forever, and the trunk's contents were an unimaginable chaos when he got done. He couldn't wait satisfactorily at table, a prime defect, for if you haven't your own servant in an Indian hotel you are likely to have a slow time of it, and go away hungry. We couldn't understand his English, he couldn't understand ours. And when we found that he couldn't understand his own, it seemed time for us to part. I had to discharge him, there was no help for it. But I did it as kindly as I could, and as gently. We must part, said I, but I hoped we should meet again in a better world. It was not true, but it was only a little thing to say, and saved his feelings, and cost me nothing. But now that he was gone, and was off my mind and heart, my spirits began to rise at once, and I was soon feeling brisk, and ready to go out and have adventures. Then his newly hired successor flitted in, touched his forehead, and began to fly around here, there, and everywhere, on his velvet feet, and in 5 minutes he had everything in the room, hip-dash shape and Bristol fashion, as the sailors say, and was standing at the salute, waiting for orders. Dear me, what a rustler he was after the slumberous way of Manuel, poor old slug. All my heart, all my affection, all my admiration, went out spontaneously to this frisky little forked black thing, this compact and compressed incarnation of energy and force and promptness and celerity and confidence, this smart, smiley, engaging, shiny-eyed little devil, feruled on his upper end by a gleaming fire-coal of a fez with a red-hot tassel dangling from it. I said, with deep satisfaction, you'll suit. What is your name? He reeled it mellowly off. Let me see, if I can make a selection out of it for business uses, I mean, we will keep the rest for Sundays. Give it to me in installments. He did it. But there did not seem to be any short ones, except Mausage suggested Mouse. It was out of character, it was too soft, too quiet, too conservative, it didn't fit his splendid style. I considered, and said, Mouse is short enough, but I don't quite like it. It seems colorless, inharmonious, inadequate, and I am sensitive to such things. How do you think Satan would do?
Yes, master. Satan do wear good. It was his way of saying very good. There was a rap at the door. Satan covered the ground with a single skip. There was a word or two of Hindustani, then he disappeared. 3. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.